Lawmakers are quickly coming up on their deadline for passing a new two-year state budget. Virtually every Ohioan will be affected by what it contains. Taxes, the environment, education, and social issues are all rolled up in that two-year spending plan. Three folks who keep tabs on the budget and other state business are our guests. Reporters who are members of the Ohio Legislative Correspondents Association are in to dissect the budget and update other events at the state capitol. Today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working together for Ohio farmers to advance agriculture and strengthen our communities, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Usually, my guests today are the ones asking me the questions. As reporters who cover state government, they'll often call to get Farm Bureau's views on an issue. But today, the tables are turned, and I'm the one that gets to apply all the heat. Jackie Borchardt is with the Cincinnati Inquirer. Mike Thompson is with WOSU-TV and radio. And Julie Carr Smythe is with the Associated Press. To all of you, welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
So I don't want to, but I do want to begin our show with on a sad note. A gentleman who would be one of your colleagues who would call Ohio Farm Bureau on issues quite a bit passed away recently. Jim Siegel died about a week ago at the age of 46 years old, and just a tremendous guy and a tremendous reporter. Julie, maybe just a few of your thoughts on Jim and what he meant to Ohio and your profession.
Well, Jim Siegel had been covering the state house for about 20 years for various media organizations. Most recently, of course, the Columbus Dispatch. He just absolutely blanketed the state house. He had a really deep list of sources who would tell him what was going on. A lot of us in the press corps would watch Jim's coverage to know exactly what was happening behind the scenes because his sourcing was so good. And he was a great writer. He was great at explaining complicated stuff, making it sometimes funny, very accessible, and we're all just really mourning his loss.
Mike, I know you you knew Jim, too.
Yeah, he's been on my television show, Columbus on the Record, for about 10 years, I would say. It's been a long time, anyway. And I love, he could break down the most complex issues into the shortest explanations and easily understood by folks who were not statehouse insiders or were not political junkies. And he just had a way of doing that. I'm really going to miss the article that he did after the budget was approved. He would say, this is how the budget affects you. You know, if you're a left-handed dog catcher in Knox County, this is how the budget affects you. If you're for big oil, this is how it affects you. And it really was a terrific piece of bringing this complex document, piece of legislation, into very real terms. And he just, it's really a shame.
So one of the speakers at the memorial for Jim, which was at the State House, made the point that the folks who've been recognized in memorials at the State House were people like Jim Rhodes, Vern Reif, George Voinovich, John Glenn. Jackie, now we have a journalist being recognized. The governor's there. Leaders of every political party, lobbyists of all kinds. I think Jim would have taken some satisfaction in the fact that in this day and age when you people are the enemies of the people, that the political world came together around the loss of a great man and a great journalist.
Yeah, I think that representation, you had Republicans, you had Democrats, you had lobbyists from every corner of Cap Square. You had his childhood friends were there. I sat next to a man who flew in from Atlanta, went to elementary school with Jim. And I think it speaks volumes to, you know, the kind of journalist he was. He was very fair, that he, always tried to get to, you know, the real meaning of the story or what was going on and try to cut through the spin. And he could do that in a really easy way. I remember many times standing next to him while we were asking politicians questions, and you know, the politician would give an answer that, you know, sent our BS meters all the way through the roof. And Jim would get this look in his eye that was like, I don't know about that. But he would never, he was never rude back. And he just would frame his, you know, frame his follow-up question in a very polite way, just to try to, you know, really get to what the truth was.
Yeah, Jim could play offense without being offensive. And that was the mark of a true journalist. Our thoughts, condolences, prayers to his wife, his two sons, and all of his co-workers at the Columbus Dispatch. Jim Siegel, a great journalist and a great guy, gone too early at the age of 46 years old. So Jim might well have been in one of your chairs today as we started talking about what's happening at the State House. Jackie, maybe just start us off. We're going to talk a lot about budget, but heading into the budget, it's being influenced somewhat by what some people will say is just this windfall coming into the state of Ohio. We're doing pretty well on tax collections.
Yeah, you know, we're ahead of projected revenues. And, you know, if you think back 2 years ago, we were in a completely different spot. We were behind on tax revenues, and they had to trim about $1 billion out of the final version of the budget. And at that point, the budget office under former Governor John Kasich really pared back their forecasting and went even more conservative than they have been before. So I don't think it's surprising that we are in a position where we have more revenue than expected, considering we were already having a very, very conservative outlook. But of course, we're in a budget cycle. You get the news that you have money to spend. So then the big question is, how do you spend it?
Mike, as we look at some of the deliberations that are getting started in the Senate, and their deadline's June 30 to get this mm-hmm. done and get the budget to Governor DeWine. Taxes, of course, and within the budget, always the big thing. As you're watching what they're talking about there, what's got your attention?
Well, you know, there's the across the board income tax. You know, the House proposed a 6.6% reduction in across the board income tax for everybody. Now, the two lower income categories would pay no income taxes under both plans. Under what, $22,000 would pay no income tax, and everybody above that, we get a 6.6% decrease in the House budget. Senate up that to 8%, and then the big fight is over the pass-through that sole proprietors, limited partnerships enjoy. The first $250,000 of that business income is tax-exempt, and then there's a big tax cut on top of that, tax break on top of that. So that could be where the drama is between the House and the Senate as far as the tax benefits there.
And you'll remember that, you know, obviously the previous governor, John Kasich, he came into office way back in 2011 wanting to completely eliminate Ohio's income tax. And, you know, the mood within the Republican caucus doesn't seem to be that right now. But yet even these proposed cuts, you know, look pretty deep from the Democrats' point of view, because they want to see more of that money going to individual government programs like schools and things like that, as opposed to back to individuals. And that's, you know, one of those rifts that's constantly there between parties of how to respond to good times.
Yeah, and government, to compare with what Julie just said about former Governor Kasich, Governor Mike DeWine came in the office not asking for tax cuts, or he didn't campaign on tax cuts. And in his first State of the State address, really made a pitch for investing, an investment budget, and investing in children's services and services for the elderly and new mothers and foster care. And, you know, that's and specifically said, I don't think we need to cut taxes at this point. And so when the House comes back and says, well, we're going to cut income taxes, and then the Senate says, well, you know, hold my drink here, we're going to cut them some more. You know, what they're really arguing over between the House and the Senate versions is about $5 for someone who makes $50,000 a year. Now, the overall tax cut would be about $90 to $95 a year, which, you know, could be a lot of money. That's certainly not anything to throw away. But in the aggregate, you know, that's millions of dollars a year that could be going to some of these programs. You know, we still have an opiate crisis in this state and a need for more treatment.
And they don't forget, Mike DeWine actually raised taxes. And one of the first things he did with the increase on the gasoline tax, he wanted an even higher gasoline tax than what was eventually approved. But I think that's what the Senate argues, is their income tax cut offsets what people are paying or will start paying in a couple a week or so when the gas tax goes into effect.
A couple of pieces of the budget that farmers are paying close attention to have to do with what do we do with farmers who are trying to reduce the nutrient runoff that has caused these algal blooms in Lake Erie. Jackie, as you look at what's going on between the House and the Senate and the governor, what do you see shaping up there?
Yeah, I don't know if you're talking specifically the H2O Ohio initiative, which is what Governor DeWine has coined, kind of his all-encompassing water quality effort. And, you know, he pitched that to be kind of like a 10-year program and investing, you know, I think close to $1 billion over 10 years. And the House kind of took that out. The Senate has added some more back in. And then we also have standalone legislation that's trying to, you know, set up the fund for this program. So that's still in the mix. I think that'll be one of the things that that they talk about when they get to conference committee and try to decide. But I think that's something that where there's broad support in both chambers and both parties to support financially.
Well, and you remember, or, you know, it's good to have the context that when you're doing a budget like this, those kind of programs that, you know, take from some, give to some, you know, are what can be negotiated when you're trying to find that final compromise, which we're in those last few days of trying to find a compromise and hit our constitutional deadline on the budget. So, you know, that has been a really tough one for the Republican caucus.
How would you characterize this, Mike? You've seen more than one budget drafted. Just the general atmosphere down at the State House, collaborative, contentious, in between?
Well, I'm not down there day to day, but just from talking to folks and then reading between the lines of their coverage and talking to folks who appear on my show, it just seems much more collaborative. You know, one of the things that Jim Siegel said in one of his shows that I was reviewing this past few months, he says, Republican lawmakers are just happy to have a governor they can talk to now. So it just seems to be more collaborative than it was when John Kasich was governor and he was, you know, had ambitions elsewhere. And it just seems more collaborative. Larry Householder, the House speakers, working with Democrats, you know, is really the predictions I've heard is this budget process will be fairly easy.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is anticipating it to go past June 30th. They think they'll get it all done and wrapped up and signed with time to spare. And 2 years ago, we were right up against midnight with, you know, them rushing the couple thousand pages in for the governor's signature. And if you think back to Kasich's last few budgets, you know, he would propose these, you know, bold, quote unquote, bold ideas and proposals, and then the House would just toss them all. And they would introduce basically a completely new budget, and then the Senate would work off that. And this year, I think you really saw, you know, Mike DeWine put a plan out there, and the House, you know, really tried to build on it, and they kept much of the framework that he had established.
Quick thought, Julie?
Yeah, I think that Kasich often would muddy up this last piece of the budget with rushing back in with those programs that got sliced, and I doubt we're going to see Des Moines have to do that.
We are talking about things happening at the Ohio State House with three people who spend their careers watching what's going on down there. Julie Carr Smythe with the Associated Press, Mike Thompson with WOSU Television and Radio, and Jackie Borchert, who is the Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer. We'll be back with more on the budget and other things Ohio politics when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
With over 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA members and Ohio agriculture is undeniable. Farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses, and in turn, those amazingly fast four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
At Georgia Boot, we build our boots just like the people who wear them. Tough. dependable, and hardworking, you need a boot that you can count on. That's why Georgia Boot always uses rich, full-grain leathers and comfort insoles to maximize your all-day comfort. We've been building boots that way since 1937. You pick the best tools for the job, why would your boots be any different? Georgia Boot is America's hardest-working boot. Go to georgiaboot.com to see our latest promotions or to find a dealer near you.
Look at this house, Brad. Just the place for some songwriting inspiration. It could be a song about home insurance or auto insurance or a car home bundle with Nationwide. Two songs in one. What would you call that, a crossover?
I think it's more of a mashup, Peyton.
Yeah, a mashup. Genius. Let's make a mashup.
Nationwide is proud to be the exclusive insurance provider for Ohio Farm Bureau. To find a local farm agent, visit farmagentfinder.com.
Savings compared to standalone price of each policy. Product availability varies by state agent and other factors. Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company, Columbus, Ohio.
For farmers and small business owners looking for quality, affordable health care for themselves and employees, the Ohio Farm Bureau Health Benefits Plan may be your solution. The plan is available for employers with fewer than 100 employees and sole proprietors who have employees, are headquartered in Ohio, and operate within the farm-to-fork sector. To learn more about qualifications and plan details, visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. Quality, affordable health care option. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org.
Your projects are a big deal, so use equipment that can get the job done. Cat Equipment sets the standard for the industry. The Cat product line includes more than 300 machines to handle a wide variety of duties. Ohio Farm Bureau members can save up to $5,000 when buying or leasing qualifying Cat equipment, plus a $250 credit on select work tool attachments. Learn more by visiting ofbf.org/savings and click on the Caterpillar logo. Limitations and restrictions apply.
News from the State House. That's the work product of Jackie Borchert, Mike Thompson, and Julie Carr Smythe, all members of the Ohio Legislative Correspondents Association. We've been talking budget, so slipping into the studio for a moment, Jenna Beadle, who's our Director of State Policy here at the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. As we look at what's happened thus far, both in the House, but primarily here lately in the Senate, one of the big things that Farm Bureau was pushing for was retention of the business tax credit. That's in there, right?
Yes. So Mike talked about this a little earlier, but the House did a plan and reduced the business income deduction that is currently set at $250,000 of business income being exempt from taxing. They reduced that to $100,000. And they did this in order to do the 6.6% tax income tax deduction that we had talked about earlier as well. However, the problem is a lot of farmers are small business owners and fall into that category. So we were advocating to restore the business income deduction to current law. It would have cost small businesses about $1 billion with the changes that the House had proposed. The Senate has made their changes and they have restored the $250,000 income tax threshold, but have eliminated the 3% flat tax rate that was in effect for any business income after the $250,000.
There are many state departments and agencies that we lobby for them to get adequate funding in every two-year budget. Those would include Ohio State University, Central State Extension, OARDC, Soil and Water, the College of Vet Medicine, Departments of Agriculture, Natural Resources, Environmental Protection. Do we feel that just in general the Senate is hearing our message there?
Absolutely. The legislature in general has heard our message on these issues, and specifically the Senate with their most recent changes in the sub bill. But we've seen greater funding for the Ohio Department of Agriculture that was necessary regarding meat inspection, food safety in general, and other programs that we follow, soil and water conservation districts, which are huge for water quality, the boots on the ground that our members are working with. You know, they saw an increase that we are very supportive of. Extension, like you mentioned, Central State saw a lot of increases in the governor's proposal for both their agricultural research development and also extension services, and then OSU Extension and OERDC saw increases in the Senate's most recent version, so we're very happy with that.
And we're working on a piece that if you're a craft beer fan and you want to do some sampling, we want to make it easier to do that.
Yes, this legislation was known last General Assembly as the Ohio Proud Craft Beer Act, and that bill has been rolled into the budget in its entirety. It would expand the Ohio Proud program to craft breweries and distilleries for beer and spirits, and would allow for sampling and selling at farmers markets. And so that would create an awesome marketing opportunity for our craft brewing partners.
Farmers don't always get everything they want, but I think they're always heard down at the State House. And while you're there on a daily basis keeping tabs for them, the big thing that Farm Bureau does to influence state government are those farmers themselves, Jenna.
Absolutely. We always encounter an open door with the legislature and the governor's administration. That's largely due to our grassroots members who are out there meeting with legislators. I just came from testifying in a committee where one of the representatives talked about how last night he and another member on the committee were at a local Farm Bureau event touring a robotic dairy and having some really good ice cream. So, you know, they very much value the relationship that they have with our local members, and then it really helps us as we try to deliver our message to them down in Columbus.
Thanks for taking a little time out of your day to come join us today.
Thanks, Joe. My pleasure.
Jenna Beadle, who is our Director of State Policy with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. We started to touch on this a little bit earlier as we visited with our State House reporters, Jackie Borchert, Mike Thompson, and Julie Carr Smythe. But I want to follow up. Maybe we'll start here with you on this, Jackie. Governor DeWine's been in office 6 months, give or take. How would you assess how things are going?
I think Governor DeWine coming into office kind of hit a reset button over on Cap Square. And, you know, toward the end of Governor Kasich's term, relations between the governor's office and the legislature were not great. And you saw several proposals in Kasich's last year that just went nowhere. And it seemed like he really had no influence at the State House. And like what Mike was mentioning earlier, it's a much more collaborative feeling. And, the House Speaker Larry Householder was elected, with the help of Democrats. So in the House, what we've seen is a stronger spirit of bipartisanship, certainly in a stark contrast to the last, couple sessions. And so he's, turning to Democrats to deliver votes on key legislation, such as the transportation budget bill, which included the gas tax increase, and also turned to Democrats again to get key votes to get the House Bill 6, which is the nuclear energy efficiency, renewable energy overhaul bill, for lack of a better term, or the nuclear bailout bill, which is probably a shorter way to say it. So we're also seeing that in the House, they're introducing a lot of bipartisan legislation on things where you find a lot of common ground, like foster care and helping prevent domestic violence.
Yeah, I think that DeWine actually was saddled with quite a few things from the Kasich administration that he has not made a big deal out of, which he's had to handle. We mentioned before the gas tax that had to be his first thing out of the starting gate because the roads were a mess and Kasich had used some one-time money on that. So I think that he put some Democrats in his cabinet and people are looking at him as being a pretty practical governor.
We'll talk more about the performance of our governor, our House Speaker, and some other statewide leaders when we continue in just a couple of moments. A look at all things Ohio politics with Jackie Borchert of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, Mike Thompson, WOSU TV and radio. We'll return in a moment. Want to know what's happening in Ohio politics? You'll learn the truth from my three guests in the studio with us today. Mike Thompson of WOSU TV and radio, Jackie Borchert of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press. They all cover the State House and Ohio politics. I ask you, Mike, while we were at break there, if you had anything to add to the DeWine assessment. It was an interesting comment.
It just seems like he's having fun. I mean, this is the job he's always wanted. He wanted to be governor. He doesn't have ambitions past this, so he's governing, and he's taking on big issues like the opioid crisis and early childhood education and things like that. And he stuck to his conservative roots. He signed the heartbeat bill, and he wants to keep the small business tax break. But, you know, he just as we're recording this today, he's out in Toledo speaking with farmers dealing with the wet spring. I see pictures of him everywhere. You guys see him every day and how he's interacting with folks and things like that.
No, he's very visible. He's very accessible to the press. It seems like every day we get notice that he's going to be out in the public somewhere the next day. And that is a total 180 from the previous administration.
So Mike said he probably doesn't have aspirations beyond the job that he's got now. But I've heard speculation about how long he wants to hold the job he has now. I mean, we're barely into the DeWine administration. Julie, what's the beat on that?
I think there are two theories, at least in my mind. One is he'll be a one-term governor, and one is he might get elected and then hand the job over midterms to John Husted, who also has had aspirations for a long time, obviously ran for governor last time and caught a deal with DeWine.
I want to go back. Several of you mentioned a few things about Larry Householder and the fact that he brought along the members of the Democratic caucus to get himself elected Speaker of the House. Mike, as you look at how that dynamic is shaping up, how successful so far?
Seems to be. I mean, for certain things, I mean, Larry Householder, they signed the heartbeat bill. Democrats don't want that, the anti-abortion bill that bans abortion basically at 6 weeks of a pregnancy. But you guys would know better than me, but he has enlisted Democratic support on the energy bill, on the budget bill, the transportation bill with the gasoline tax. It's a smidgen of bipartisanship, perhaps even a bit more than a smidgen down there.
Right, and even on things like charter schools, cracking down on for-profit charter school abuses and problems and regulations. That's been something that's been Democrats' big issue for years, and he's been an ally with them on that just this past week.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jenny.
And I would just say, to expand on what Julie said, it's more than just getting the votes. It seems as though he sees a lot of these issues that Democrats have been kind of yelling into the void over the last few years. He's taking them seriously and saying, you know, that's a good idea, and maybe, you know, we can work together on that.
And his home area has been hit hard by the opioid crisis, and education funding has been top of his mind for a long time. And DeRolf was in his hometown, and the case that was ruled that Ohio's funding system for education was unconstitutional. So it's more than just, I think, bipartisan politics. I get the feeling these are things he really cares about and are important to his constituents.
Yeah, I was just going to say, with the tax cuts, that's where he sees why the House wants to move that small business tax deduction down from $250,000 to $100,000. For him, it's a fairness issue. And he's, you know, saying if someone's making, you know, more than $100,000 a year through an LLC or limited or private partnership, you know, should they really get that break when you have people who are making far less than that who are paying a much higher tax rate?
Well, that being said, I mean, he's a very shrewd politician. And when you make friends on both sides with maximum amounts of Ohioans, that's good for you as a politician, especially in a closely divided state. So, you know, if he has ambitions beyond the speakership, this is kind of the way to get that support going.
State House reporters Julie Carr-Smythe, Mike Thompson, and Jackie Borchardt are in the Town Hall, Ohio studio looking at things happening here in the state capitol. We had so far on the show, very happy to have had Attorney General Yost, Treasurer Sprague, Auditor Faber. We're hoping that Secretary of State LaRose can join us pretty soon. As you look at the early period of their administration, anything jump out from any of those other statewide offices?
Well, I did cover last week. Frank LaRose put out a pretty interesting order that involves election security. It was not about counting the vote itself, but it was about getting back office operations at the 88 county boards in order, making sure that they call in Homeland Security and get screenings of their IT systems, get on secure emails, make sure they have unified web addresses, make sure that there aren't going to be any glitches that would affect public confidence at that level. For example, a website going down out in rural Ohio the day of the vote, which wouldn't necessarily affect the vote, but it might make people kind of freak out that the Russians are coming.
Just within the past couple of days, he has said that he will not endorse a candidate for president in this election. He will stay out of it officially as a Secretary of State because he runs the elections here in the state of Ohio. So that's different than his predecessors. Frank LaRose.
We'll be back with more on Town Hall Ohio right after this.
$500 in bonus cash on eligible Ford vehicles. $750 in bonus cash on eligible Lincoln vehicles. All it takes is to be or become a member of the Ohio Farm Bureau. Bonus cash applies to purchases and leases. For all the program requirements and details, visit ofbf.org. Big bonus cash on new Fords and Lincolns exclusively for Ohio Farm Bureau members. Visit ofbf.org.
Look at this house, Brad. Just the place for some songwriting inspiration. It could be a song about home insurance or auto insurance or a car home bundle with Nationwide. Two songs in one. What would you call that? A crossover?
I think it's more of a mashup, Peyton.
Yeah, a mashup. Genius. Let's make a mashup.
Nationwide is proud to be the exclusive insurance provider for Ohio Farm Bureau. To find a local farm agent, visit farmagentfinder.com.
Savings compared to standalone price of each policy. Product availability varies by state agent and other factors. Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company, Columbus, Ohio.
Water. Every drop matters. No one knows that better than Ohio's farmers. Clean water is important to every farm and to every farmer. That's why Ohio Farm Bureau has invested millions of dollars to help farmers protect this vital resource. And in the process, protect the future for everyone. To learn more about Farm Bureau's clean water initiatives and for information on becoming a member, we invite you to visit farmersforwater.org today.
This year, Ohio Farm Bureau celebrates 100 years of serving farmers all over the Buckeye State. That's a full century of advocating on the behalf of farmers about issues impacting their livelihood. Join in the celebration by checking out our Centennial Store. Whether you're shopping for t-shirts, hats, and jackets featuring the vintage Ohio Farm Bureau logo, pint glasses for your cover crop beer, or a history book highlighting Ohio Farm Bureau's accomplishments now spanning 100 years, you can find it all right now at OhioFarmBureauStore.com. That's OhioFarmBureauStore.com.
My peers and I mourning the state of the fourth estate, of the fourth estate.
Our guest in the studio with us this week on Town Hall Ohio, State House reporters Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, Jackie Borchardt of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Mike Thompson of WOSU TV and Radio. I started to talk about this till I saw we were out of time before the break, Jackie, but we've been trying to get medical marijuana available in Ohio. It's happening, but it's happening pretty slowly, correct?
Right. It's been a slow rollout since the first four retail dispensaries opened in mid-January. I think we're up now to about 18 that are open, but not, there's 56 that have been licensed so far. So less than half are open. And of course, the bottleneck goes even further back with that. Like, we only have about half the growers that have products on the shelves. We only have four processors making the various infused products, the edibles, lotions, tinctures, pills. And so it's just been, I feel like every couple of weeks there's like a new product, there's a new dispensary. So it is just very slow, and a lot of patients are still really frustrated.
Another thing they're talking about at the State House is legalizing sports betting in Ohio.
Well, it's coming. There's no doubt. I mean, it started with the Supreme Court saying that it doesn't make any sense for only Nevada to have legal sports betting. So New Jersey and Delaware actually was the first. They beat New Jersey by a week. And then since then, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, two neighboring states to us, have legalized sports betting. And it's only a matter of time, I believe.
Right. I just think it's going to be, this balance. AP had an interesting story a week or so ago about a lot of the, in those states that Mike mentions, the addicts are suffering somewhat because all of the advertising that goes with legalizing this, brings out their addictions. And this was something we cared a lot about when we legalized, when we talk about the lottery or we talk about casinos, and it hasn't been brought up as much with sports betting because people do look at it as sort of a fait accompli, I think.
The one area where I think that is coming up is that a lot of the sports betting They want to make sure that you can do it online from your smartphone. And so that means instead of having a, you know, brick and mortar casino or racino where people have to go there to do it, you can do it from your couch. You can do it from a restaurant. You can do it from the Buffalo Wild Wings where you're watching the game. So I think, you know, they're right. It's going to happen. It's just kind of a question of what is that going to look like in Ohio and who's going to make the money and where's that money going to go?
That's where the money is. 81% of the betting in New Jersey is online. It's not at the racetracks mm-hmm. or the places around New Jersey. It's on the phone.
Not really a state house issue directly, but Julie, I just saw a piece that I think you've been involved writing a rather significant look back at 50 years ago when the river caught fire up in Cleveland.
Yes, the actual anniversary of the infamous 1969 Cuyahoga River fire will be Saturday. And I took a look at the city kind of embracing that idea a little bit. There have been something like 90 Burning River type businesses created with that name in them, and a lot of them in the last 5 years or so. And the mayor says, you know, we know who we are. We're ready to move on. I mean, you know, LeBron made them all feel a lot better about themselves in Cleveland. And so it's very interesting. People are really looking at it as a sort of a badge of honor now that the river is clean and things are a lot better there. And they're drinking a Burning River beer and enjoying themselves.
I've often read, tell me if this is true or not, that there's a direct link between the Cuyahoga River burning and the creation of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
That's right. Oddly enough, the photo that was on the front of Time magazine was of a different fire. It was a blazing inferno from the 1950s that went on their cover right after the 1969 fire, but it caught the public attention, started the US EPA, led very directly to the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and now Cleveland feels like they can take credit for a lot of the positives of the environmental movement.
Jackie, one of the items that I know you're following closely, because it's from where your hometown, or from the newspaper, Cincinnati Inquirer area, down there there's a lawsuit brewing that gets to home rule, and who can say how
another
guns...
home rule lawsuit. Yeah.
give us 30 seconds on what's going on down there.
You know, a law that was passed in December strengthens an existing Ohio law that limits local regulation on firearms. And, you know, the statewide lawmakers have said there's a statewide interest in having uniform gun laws. And basically they added even more things that locals can't do. And so the local governments, especially, you know, Cincinnati, Columbus, a lot of these big cities that have gun violence are trying different ways to crack down on that. And so Cincinnati has followed Columbus in filing suit against the state over those regulations.
We'll be back to talk more about all things politics in Ohio as we continue our roundtable with Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, Jackie Borchard of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Mike Thompson of WOSU TV and Radio. We'll be back to wrap up this week's show right after this.
Where can your Ohio Farm Bureau member benefits take you? No matter the destination, Avis and Budget Rental Car will get you there. Did you know that Ohio Farm Bureau members can save up to 25% off base rates and are eligible to receive other rental car discounts like dollars off or a free upgrade? So before you put that car in drive, log on to ofbf.org/savings and click on the Avis or Budget logo. Avis and Budget, great rental car discounts exclusive to Ohio Farm Bureau members. Find them at ofbf.org/savings.
No matter where your travels take you, Ohio Farm Bureau membership benefits will follow. Before you check in, you should check out the wide variety of options Farm Bureau members have when it comes to hotel discounts. From names like Red Roof Inn and Motel 6 to over 30 iconic brands offered through Choice and Wyndham, you'll be able to find the comfort level that's right for you. To learn more on how to save on your lodging needs, visit ofbf.org/savings. savings, another valuable member benefit exclusive to Ohio Farm Bureau members.
With over 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA members and Ohio agriculture is undeniable. Farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses, and in turn, those amazingly fast four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
Look at this house, Brad. Just the place for some songwriting inspiration. It could be a song about home insurance or auto insurance or a car home bundle with Nationwide. Two songs in one. What would you call that? A crossover?
I think it's more of a mashup, Peyton.
Yeah, a mashup. Genius. Let's make a mashup.
Nationwide is proud to be the exclusive insurance provider for Ohio Farm Bureau. To find a local farm agent, visit farmagentfinder.com.
Savings compared to standalone price of each policy. Product availability varies by state agent and other factors. Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company, Columbus, Ohio.
We believe in food.
Grown in the fields of Ohio.
In clean air and water.
And in preserving farmland forever.
We believe in opportunities for the next generation.
For nearly 100 years,
Ohio Farm Bureau has been bringing people together.
Join us in the journey.
Together.
Together.
Together with farmers.
Visit togetherwithfarmers.org.
We believe in food.
Grown in the fields of Ohio.
In clean air and water.
And in preserving farmland forever.
We believe in opportunities for the next generation.
For nearly 100 years,
Ohio Farm Bureau has been bringing people together.
Join us in the journey.
Together.
Together.
Together with farmers.
Visit togetherwithfarmers.org.
Have you heard about the Ohio Farm Bureau Energy Program? Eligible members are saving an average of 15% on their electric and natural gas bills. The program works through a network of suppliers to secure cost-saving pricing in competitive electric and natural gas regions. We've heard from members who've saved hundreds of dollars annually on their energy costs. Getting started is easy. Simply call the Energy Program customer service line, 800-830-3501, and our representative will assist you from there, 800-830-3501. You can also visit ofbf.org/savings to learn more.
Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Ain't that news? Ain't that good news? Man, 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 ain't that news?
The folks who deliver you news of what's happening in Ohio politics are in the studio with us today. Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, Mike Thompson, WOSU TV and Radio, and Jackie Borchert of the Cincinnati Inquirer. You're my de facto pot, marijuana, all things cannabis person today. I ask you about medical marijuana. What's happening on the hemp front, which I, now that I said that, I need to back up. Hemp and marijuana, two totally different things.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the cannabis plant, but hemp has, by law, a very, very, very low trace amounts of THC, which is the compound that generates a high. So you can smoke a field of hemp and you might get sick from all the smoke, but you're not going to get high at all. But that bill, it's Senate Bill 57, it's passed the Senate. It is awaiting a floor vote in the House. I'm hearing that that Speaker Householder just kind of wants to make sure that all the interested parties are okay with this version, because it is a compromise. You know, the Farm Bill in 2018 legalized hemp nationally, and in order, though, to grow it and to process and sell it, each state has to come up with a plan for how they're going to regulate it and submit it to the feds for approval. So this is essentially Ohio's plan, and it would allow farmers in Ohio to grow hemp as an agricultural crop, as a commodity, just like corn and soybeans. But there are a few hoops that they'd have to jump through. They'd have to, you know, pay a license fee. The Department of Ag is going to write all those specific rules in the next probably, you know, 6 months or so. It has an emergency clause, so it'd go into effect right away, which would allow sales of CBD, cannabidiol, which is a really popular hemp-derived compound that you see everywhere now. And it would also allow, like, Ohio State University has expressed interest in growing, starting to grow hemp.
So as we close out the show, let's turn our attention to Ohio, but in the context of national politics. And earlier this week, to the surprise of millions, Donald Trump, Mike, said, I kind of like this job. I'm going to go for it again.
Yeah, he's officially a candidate for re-election of President of the United States. So, of course, he's been running for re-election since, I think, the inauguration of his current term. So, yeah, it's going to be a crazy ride, starting with the Democratic debates, which are coming up at the very end of this month, two nights.
How do you debate with 20-plus people in the room?
You break them into two, so it's two sets of 10.
Okay, good. It's only 10.
Yes. So there's two nights and this doubleheader, and it'll be very similar to what we saw with the GOP campaign in 2016. They'll each get maybe 3 minutes of airtime. The front runners will get attacked. Everyone's jockeying for the best soundbite that'll appear on the news the next day.
So there was a bit of surprise, I think, when Donald Trump took Ohio 2 years ago, especially some of the areas that he took, traditionally Democratic strongholds. Given that, Julie, does that now mean that Ohio is no longer a battleground state, or do they just will the Democrats concede Ohio?
I don't think they will.
I don't think so.
One of the really interesting areas to watch is the Youngstown area, which was, you know, at one time one of the industrial powerhouses of the entire country. Very Democratic, union history there, and that valley went for Trump, and so it was very interesting to see. It showed sort of that blue collar support for his message. It will be very interesting to see what happens now, because he's got a term under his belt, and a lot of the blue collar folks, a lot of the farmers, a lot of the other people who have supported him have been affected by some policies in a negative way that is going to affect how Ohio winds up landing this time.
I think demographics in that part of the state and other parts of the state are changing. You look down in the area that I pay attention to in Southwest Ohio, Hamilton County is becoming a blue county. You know, they elected all Democrats to their county commission last year, which is the first. And you look at Franklin County; it's similarly, it's changing. The suburban areas of you know, our urban cores are becoming less reliably Republican. So Democrats are very cautious to say, you know, what their plans are, but they're definitely saying we are not giving up on Ohio.
So as our regular Town Hall Ohio listeners know, I will often say, don't buy into the journalism is evil narrative. And I also would tell you that if you read something or hear something that Jackie Borchert, Mike Thompson, and Julie Carr-Smythe had to tell you, you're getting the facts and you're getting it straight. Folks, thanks for joining us on the show today, and maybe we'll get you back in sometime.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Jackie Borchert, Cincinnati Inquirer, Mike Thompson, WOSU TV and Radio, Julie Carr-Smythe with the Associated Press. Thanks to everybody for joining us on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.